Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC. On tomorrow's program, Alain de Botton on his book, Religion for Atheists. Also, more coverage of the Supreme Court Affordable Care Act proceedings. Right now, a year and a few months into the so-called Arab Spring, the Middle East expert who blogs and tweets as Abu Aardvark has some thoughts about winners and losers. Iran, loser. Israel, also a loser. Let's take a closer look with Mark Lynch, a.k.a. Abu Aardvark. He's director of the Institute for Middle East Studies at George Washington University, the editor of the Middle East Channel on foreignpolicy.com, and a senior fellow at the Center for New American Security. He has advised the Obama administration on Middle East foreign policy, and he has a new book called The Arab Uprising, The Unfinished Revolutions of the New Middle East. Welcome back to WNYC, Mark Lynch.
Hey, it's great to be on the show.
First of all, you coined the term Arab Spring, but you said you're embarrassed to have coined that now. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm a bit embarrassed by the term Arab Spring. When I used it back in the very beginning of January, I was just referring back to the comparison to Eastern Europe and, you know, this idea of this explosion out of nowhere. But I didn't expect it to catch on. And, you know, December, January, not really the spring.
Not really the spring in terms of the calendar, but what about the meaning of it?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that one of the things that I really try and detail in the book is that what you saw in the Arab world over the last decade, actually, has been this rising tide of popular protest. And, you know, the idea of an Arab Spring is that everything was quiet, everything was apathetic, and then all of a sudden there's this explosion from nowhere. But if you were living in the Middle East in the 2000s, I mean, you couldn't miss the amount of activism and protest and the new media. I mean, you remember back in 2005 seeing a million people in the streets in Lebanon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this was not a part of the world where everyone was sleeping and they needed to be awakened. It's more that you had this rising tide of protest, which finally broke through.
So now you say the rising powers in the region are Turkey, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, and the greatest losers are Israel, Iran, and Al-Qaeda. Let's talk about the countries on the upswing first. What do you mean when you call Turkey and Qatar swing states?
Well, the two kinds of countries that are going to do well in New Middle East are the kinds of countries that, number one, can appeal to this new Arab public, that they have something to say that allows them to align themselves with what this broad public opinion wants. And Turkey has got that ideological model. They've got the example of an Islamic democracy and a very successful economy. And so, you know, Turkey is well-placed. Qatar has Al Jazeera, and it's been positioning itself as this swing vote, which means that it can talk to people on all sides of the ideological divides and didn't get trapped in the very rigid kinds of polarized politics that we saw for a lot of the last decade. And the other thing that they've got is that they're not open to subversion on their own soil. Basically, they're stable. There's not a lot of ways that their enemies can get in there and destabilize them. So if you're a country like Syria, you used to be strong because you were part of this resistance axis and you're a very strong dictatorship. And now Syria is just it's just an arena for great powers to fight their battles out on its territory.
Turkey's Prime Minister Erdogan met with President Obama over the weekend. They're in Seoul, South Korea. They agreed that the U.S. and Turkey would provide non-lethal assistance to opposition groups in Syria. That means communications equipment and medical supplies, I gather. This is ahead of the April 1st meeting of the so-called Friends of Syria, who want Syrian President Assad to step down. I heard another report, one that I consider less credible, on a talk show last night that said Turkey is massing troops near the Syrian border. What do you think Turkey's role is with respect to the crisis in Syria?
Well, you know, Turkey, going as the crisis began to develop, everybody was relying on Turkey to be the one country that really had a lot of influence in Syria. You know, very strong economic relations, long border, and good relations between Erdogan and President Assad. And I think that Turkey's been a bit embarrassed by its inability to deliver. I think its reputation has actually taken a little bit of a hit when it turned out that it wasn't able to get Assad to go along with any kind of political reform plans. I think right now Turkey is a little bit scared. I mean, they're worried about the unrest on their border. I don't really put much credibility in the idea that Turkey is going to invade or even set up safe zones, but you know they can't be indifferent to the idea that chaos will spread across their border. But I think Turkey really wants to work with the United States, with the Arab League, the international community. They don't want to be either seen as going alone or forced to go alone.
And then Qatar, different kind of country, an emirate. Unlike Turkey, which has its form of democracy, Qatar relatively stable with few internal problems, the sponsor and home of Al Jazeera, as you say. And you're right that they'll be a more effective player than the sectarian, divided, and succession-focused emirate in Saudi Arabia. How come?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. They're both fabulously wealthy, and they're able to use that money to good effect. But I think you put it exactly right. Saudi Arabia, I think, is much less stable than people really think it is. You know, you've got this aging leadership, sectarian divide. They really have to be internally repressive. And, you know, if I was putting together a watch list for the next 5 years of places that could really get into trouble, Saudi Arabia would be close to the top of that list.
Mark Lynch, my guest on WNYC, author of The Arab Uprising, The Unfinished Revolutions in the New Middle East. Qatar was also where the Taliban talks were supposed to happen before they broke down.
You know, Qatar wants its fingers in everything, and it's been doing that for the last decade, trying to host Palestinian reconciliation talks, trying to host the Sudan reconciliation talks. That's basically their modus operandi. They want to insert themselves into every crisis, and it's worked out pretty well for them. A decade ago, no one had ever heard of Qatar, and now they really are at the center of regional politics.
Is it fair to say, from what you've just been telling us, that the countries most on the upswing, Turkey and Qatar, are countries that are relatively moderate, and so the new balance of power indicates more power for relatively moderate states in the region?
I think for now, I think that's accurate. If you look at the countries that we would consider radical, you know, Syria, Iran, you know, they're obviously really struggling with the developments over the last year. Syria, of course, is now in this horrifying civil war. And Iran has basically had its legs cut out from under it in Middle East politics. On the one hand, you've got this rising sectarianism, and the more that Iran is seen as a Shia power rather than as the leader of a resistance movement against Israel and the United States, the less that it's able to actually appeal to people. And then the other thing is that everybody in the Arab world remembers 2009, and they remember when the Iranian regime crushed its own popular rebellion. And so when the Islamic Republic of Iran tries to say, we are leading these Arab uprisings, there's just no buyers for that. No one takes it seriously because they saw what they did to their own people.
So you say the biggest losers in the region are Iran and Israel and al-Qaeda. How have Iran and Israel both been disempowered? We always hear them juxtaposed against each other.
Well, with Israel, I think that they're right to be quite worried about this, simply because, you know, if you look at what's happened over the last 10 years, Israel has actually managed to develop pretty good working relationships with most of the Arab governments. But at the same time, they've really, really alienated public opinion across the region. And, with their stance on the Palestinian conflict, the Gaza war, the Lebanon war, things like that. And so, you know, they were in pretty good shape as long as the Arab regimes were in control. But now I think there really is the risk that they're going to pay the price of having basically systematically alienated the Arab public, because they're more empowered now. And they're going to be less willing to make the kinds of accommodations that, say, Hosni Mubarak was willing to make.
Is all the talk about how Iran will or won't get the bomb, and whether or not Israel will bomb Iran, is that largely a sideshow?
Well, it's not a sideshow. I mean, obviously, Iran getting a nuclear weapon would have a major impact on Middle East politics. But I don't think that it would really rescue their reputation or their soft power in the Middle East. I don't think that's what's driving things right now among the Arab public, at least. I mean, certainly Israel is very worried and has every reason to be worried. But within the broader Middle East, it's just not something that people are really focused upon.
The Arab League is in Baghdad for a three-day meeting this week. What is Prime Minister Maliki's goal in bringing the Arab League to Iraq, and will Syria dominate the discussion there?
Well, it certainly will dominate the discussion. And this whole thing is actually very, very interesting because, you know, for at least half a decade, it's been one of the top priority issues for the United States to try and get Iraq reintegrated into the Arab world. You know, the idea that Iraq could serve as a balancing force against Iran has taken a lot of hits. So, you know, the way Maliki has behaved and just the really extreme rejection of the Shia-led government by Saudi Arabia and by the other states in the Gulf. And so it's really quite astonishing now to see an Arab League meeting being held in Baghdad, both because there's enough security, but also simply because it's a recognition of Iraq kind of returning to its Arab roots. You know, a lot of people think that as soon as the meeting is over and everyone goes away, it'll just be forgotten and they'll go back to the way things were. But at least there's some hope here, though, that there'll be kind of a rebuilding of Iraq's relations with the Arab countries. I don't think that Iraqis really want to be pawns of Iran. They don't want to be subservient to Iran. I mean, they fought an 8-year-long war, hundreds of thousands dead with Iran in the 1980s. I think there's a very strong nationalist streak in Iraq that basically says we need someone to help back us up so we don't become dominated.
That's stronger than Shiite versus Sunni ties.
That's one of the biggest tests of that we're going to see. I mean, nobody really knows whether the Shia or the Iraqi nationalist sentiment will win out. But, you know, with all the time that I've spent talking with Iraqis, I think the nationalist streak is very, very strong.
I want to ask you about one other thing before you go, which is not directly related to the Middle East, but it may be indirectly related. Last week's coup in Mali, which ousted the democratically elected government there. Very sad for a country that was seen as a model for sub-Saharan Africa. And analysis of that coup suggested that the rebels were armed with Libyan weapons that they brought down there after the ouster of Muammar Gaddafi. Is that how you see it?
You know, I don't know enough about Mali to really comment intelligently on what happened there, but I don't think it should surprise anyone that the aftermath of the war in Libya has been destabilizing around the region. That the way Libya was set into its African context pretty much guaranteed that you were going to have the refugee flows, the returnees from Gaddafi's military, and that sort of thing. And I really hope that that Mali can get back on track. But when I look at Libya, which I follow a lot more closely, I'm actually a lot more optimistic about Libya than most people seem to be these days. There's obviously problems with militias and, you know, all of the usual transition costs. But, you know, if you look at where Libya is today with, you know, hundreds of political parties, hundreds of newspapers, elections scheduled soon, it strikes me as a place that really has a chance to get things right. And, I see this steady drip of negative reporting on Libya. And when it just doesn't jibe with what I hear from the Libyans themselves on the ground about how they're experiencing the new Libya. So I'm going to hold on to my hopes that, you know, over the long term, we'll look back and say, you know, that intervention in Libya, it was messy, it was difficult, but ultimately it was worth doing.
Mark Lynch, his new book is The Arab Uprising, The Unfinished Revolutions of the New Middle East. You can find his work at marklynch.com and lynch.foreignpolicy.com. He tweets at Abu Aardvark. And because you have opinions on all important things, I know that you have an opinion about our upcoming segment, which is what's the best TV drama of the last 25 years. And so that our listeners know, it's down to The Sopranos versus The Wire in New York Magazine's critics bracket and Breaking Bad versus Buffy the Vampire Slayer In the readers' poll, Matt Zolasites, New York Magazine TV critic, will reveal the winners live on our show. But Mark Lynch, I understand from our producer that you have an opinion.
Well, I don't think there's really any question here. It's clearly The Wire for the critics, but anybody who says it's not Buffy the Vampire Slayer just hasn't been watching TV.
Abu Aardvark for Buffy. You heard it first here on The Brian Lehrer Show. Mark, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll have those Best TV Drama winners in a minute. Stay tuned.